I am never that excited when it comes to services announcements because I feel like Apple sort of has a way of making services better as time goes on. The initial prospect isn't necessarily that amazing.
I'm feeling really good about some of the things that were announced. I'm not sure that the event itself was terribly exciting for me. It's interesting. I'm not sure if like Apple's choices about how things are placed in an event that's not about hardware has the same sort of cold logic we're used to of like things get better as the event goes on.
Yeah.
It actually went in reverse for me this time. The things I was most excited about were the things at the beginning and like it got less so over time. That said, some of the things that were announced feel like big improvements to aspects of Apple services that I'm already a big fan of, that I'm already a believer in. So like, I completely agree with what you're saying about Apple services when they're new. They tend to take a long time to get meaningfully better. Maybe that's a good way actually of introducing the actual content of the show, because it was introduced by Tim Cook as the services event, basically. You know, the narrative that we've had about Apple for a long time is that they're pivoting in some way to services. And, you know, a lot of media like to attach to that the idea that the iPhone's not selling well anymore. As the, you know, like, wouldn't you kill to have a business that was doing as poorly as the iPhone is doing? Right. But, you know, they're making it sound like there's this shift happening out of necessity. And that's fine. But like, as it was reframed a lot of times in the event, both at the beginning by Tim Cook and at the end by Oprah Winfrey, Apple is in a billion people's pockets now. And that becomes, that's a very powerful constituency for like the kinds of services and information and storytelling that can kind of knit those people together into like a connected world. It's almost as big of a vision at certain points in this event as like someone like Mark Zuckerberg presents about what he's doing. You know, it's not just about media. It's not just about entertainment. They were really telling a story about services as a way of like improving the lives of their users.
Yeah.
They did the thing that you mentioned was your pet peeve, which is giving a dictionary definition of services at the beginning.
Sure do hate that.
Yeah, totally. And it didn't do that much for me either, except that it framed the event itself as being about more than just media. It's about, in Apple's mind, what Apple can do every day to help, to serve, you know, to put the serve in services, to serve the billion people using their devices every day. I thought that was Tim's first philosophical sort of framing speech at a keynote, the way that Steve Jobs used to do. You know, the examples that I thought of Steve doing this, the famous ones are like, maybe the first famous one is the 2x2 product matrix, the laptop, desktop, professional, consumer matrix, you know, like framing sort of how Apple thinks about products. Actually, the first one I thought of was the truth is in the cloud.
Yeah.
You know, like when Steve Jobs had to get up and explain what iCloud was to everyone, that was a way of elegantly explaining Apple's philosophy of how cloud services work and how they and how they think about it slightly differently from other companies' services. And then even I would say the iPhone introduction, the three devices, you know, that famous reveal of like, we made three devices, you know, a full screen iPod and a communication device and an internet. You know, I can't remember what the three of them are, you know, but like, it's all secretly one device and it's called the iPhone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like that was what Steve was known for, was being able to introduce products by way of making them seem like an idea that's so good that it's obvious. And it's like a holistically conceived thing. It's not just like a product for sale. It's an idea about life. And I think that this was Tim Cook's first one. You might be able to argue that sort of the Apple Watch health era came before that. But I don't recall him leading off an entire event by giving a speech about that. And even if he did, it's like often he left it to deputies like Jeff Williams to explain what the service they're providing actually is, you know, as a life-saving health device. This was Tim up there by himself explaining what Apple services are for. And he listed six things that became themes throughout the rest of the event and all the services they announced, which were that Apple services are easy to use. They have attention to detail, meaning they're polished and nice. They're private and secure. They have expert curation. They're not just curated by algorithms, they're curated by humans. They're personalized to the user And family sharing was the surprise announcement. And like, I know Apple has family sharing. I use family sharing. And you know, Ariel and I download each other's apps that we purchase using family sharing. But that to me, I didn't get it yet because he hadn't announced any services, but that's the one thing that really felt like a new strategy for Apple in these services that they launched today, making them things that you should like that when one, you know, making them one price. Apple Music has a family price and a single user price, and they charge you more to share the service that you're buying with your family. They seem to have given up on that and made it just so that it's one simple price and everyone in your family gets to participate in the service. They only announced the pricing details of one service, but they did frame it this way first, as this is how the services are going to work now. And maybe it's jumping ahead to talk about the impact of that family sharing, but you know, that really sort of changed the value proposition for me. I know I immediately no longer felt like Apple was just nickel and diming me out of a few more dollars every month. And, you know, I think that these six values do kind of distinguish Apple as a service provider. I think each one of them can be sort of held up about each of Apple's services and say, this is a way in which Apple's service is better than its competitors. And, you know, there may be ways in which their competitors are better. You know, like it very well may be the case that their competitors' TV shows are better, but we don't know that yet. But, you know, for each of these six things, like these are all things that I care about.
I think that you're really right that it is kind of the first time that we see Tim Cook do this. And the part that you kind of mentioned, but was even before the whole six different things that a service should be, was he mentioned that basically the core of what Apple in 2019 is hardware, software, and services. Mm-hmm. And that reminded me of the old Steve Jobs pitch about being the intersection between technology and liberal arts.
Uh-huh.
And it sort of feels like an advanced, slightly more honest version of what that actually means.
Yeah.
I think that Steve Jobs's kind of point when he mentioned that intersection was that technology alone isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me seems to be Apple's real pitch for what services are, is making the hardware and making the software isn't enough to create a beautiful experience for you because of the way that people track you, because of the ways that the internet can be malicious, because of this, because of that, because of the way that your credit card can be stolen, even extended that far out.
Mm-hmm.
And so making an actual honest to God pitch as a publishing house is something that really does get me excited from Apple. I don't know if like we're really seeing the fullness of that right now, but I want in, you know, I want to see that more and more. Apple Music wasn't mentioned today, but I have noticed that they are doing more and more big features for artists, and not just big, huge artists that are going to have like tons of appeal, but smaller people that you might not have even heard of. They're giving articles in Apple News. They're giving the equivalent of pre-orders for streaming, where you kind of add an album to your library before it even comes out. Those sorts of things where Apple is trying to do what they said they were going to do with services, which is provide a really good, highly curated experience, I'm into. And yeah, I do think that many critical opinions of the services could be that this is just a cash grab where they want another 30 or 40 bucks from you a month to make up for the iPhone that they didn't sell you this year. But to me, it's much more. It is about, in a callous sense, lock-in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's harder to leave an ecosystem where everything is controlled by Apple. But, you know, in a more positive, optimistic sense, it's about creating such a well-made, curated experience that there would be no reason to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple News is a really good place to start this off because I think it works for both news junkies and non-news junkies. So you are somebody who has been using Apple News for a while. I'm somebody who deleted it
mm-hmm.
because I just don't want the news. And even Apple News's ability to kind of curate things doesn't work well enough for me. You've mentioned that you've spent a lot of time disliking stories.
Yes, and entire publications.
Yes, to try and really get that algorithm to understand you. And I've never really given that enough time. But the ability for me to get access to a bunch of interesting magazines that I would otherwise be missing and find articles that really do appeal to me and have substance, you know, a shocking concept for reading on your phone is exciting. So I immediately re-downloaded Apple News and signed up for the trial for Apple News Plus to see if it's something that I'm going to be into. And so far I'm liking it.
Yeah, cool. My iOS devices are installing the update right now as we speak. And that's definitely one of the first things I plan to do when we get off the phone is sign up for News Plus. I am already a heavy Apple News user. I am already a paying subscriber to certain publications via Apple News. I've tried a few. The only one that has stuck, that has the right price and provides me the stuff I want to see every day, is the Washington Post, who conspicuously are not participating in this News Plus bundle, which is really interesting. I'm paying them like $6 a month alone, you know, with the 30% Apple tax taken out of that, through Apple News for a subscription to the Washington Post, which they have a few stories every day that anyone can read, but most of them are paywalled. And interestingly, their Apple News subscription gives you full access to WashingtonPost.com. So I'm basically like a normal paying subscriber to the Washington Post digital edition using Apple News. And I've tried several others, and I never found them to my liking, except the Wall Street Journal. But the Wall Street Journal is $32.99 a month in Apple News. And I think it's even more expensive for their actual digital version, because I don't think they give you the full business stuff, like everything that subscribers get from the Wall Street Journal in Apple News, even before News Plus was announced. But because of what we'll get into about Apple News Plus, and the Wall Street Journal's presence there, that alone is enough to sell me on subscribing. But the body of the pitch was not about newspapers. It was about magazines. That may have been different if they had gotten the New York Times and the Washington Post to join. But it was kind of weird the way that they did it, pitch it as magazines, because they stuck right in at the end that the LA Times and the Wall Street Journal are participating. Oh, and then that's another thing. I mean, I may only live in LA for a few more months, but I've never bothered to subscribe to the LA Times, and now I'll get it for free. So why not read it every day? You know, before we get into what the actual product is, they gave a little bit of interesting framing for where Apple News is at. Before, when Tim Cook was on stage, he said that there are 5 billion articles read a month in Apple News, making it the number one news app. I presume that means number one news app on the App Store. Like, I don't know if they would have any other way of measuring that.
Yeah, I would assume so too.
That's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, like, all of these publications have apps in the App Store, and Apple News is already bigger than all of them. So that makes sense. They said that there were millions of daily readers. They didn't say how many millions, but like any number of millions is a lot for something, even according to the old economics of news online. If you have millions of readers, you're in great shape as a publication. So that's how many people wanting to read the news Apple has aggregated into this stock app. And then the announcement after that they made is that we are bringing magazines to Apple News. And he introduced Roger Rosner, who is the vice president of applications, which is an interesting job title, who then introduced Wyatt Mitchell, the director of design for applications, to do the actual presentation. So applications is clearly like a division in Apple. And that's like the height in the org chart at which news is being managed, which is cool, because I imagine there's like a whole Apple News team too. But like, this is something that Apple considers one of its core applications. It's funny that Tim Cook used the metaphor of a newsstand, which was the name of Apple's prior attempt to do magazines on iOS. And it's really interesting to think about what the difference is between that attempt and this one. And I can think of two major differences. The biggest difference is that the business model is different. Apple News Plus is a single $9.99 a month subscription that gets you access to everything there. And Apple pays publications based on the time you spent reading those publications. I believe it's time. It's not just number of articles. Like, it's meant to incentivize depth of usage. And Newsstand was not a content-based model. It was an app-based model. It used the app. It was basically just a folder of apps from the App Store. And it had a few like custom capabilities for those apps that like involved, for example, downloading magazines into those apps automatically to read offline. But there were these huge downloads, hundreds of megabytes, and they were all apps that the companies had to make themselves. And that proved to be too much overhead. You know, it made sense at the time when they launched it because Apple was thinking, you know, we have this app store. The app store is the good thing we've got going on iOS. So, like, let's make extra features for the app store targeted at publications. Didn't work at all. So now what they built instead is a platform for publishing news stories with some ability to customize design, actually a lot at this point. But the publications only have to do what they're good at doing, which is, you know, putting stuff into a CMS, laying it out and publishing it. Apple handles all the infrastructure and then, of course, in turn handles all the payment. They have hundreds of magazines available in this service. And then they have, quote, more than magazines too, because it includes some premium digital subscriptions to things that are not magazines. One of which is TechCrunch's new premium service, which is like really cool. I'm very excited to be able to read that for free. And then the LA Times and Wall Street Journal, as I mentioned. What's interesting is you get to pick the publications that you want to actually read. And then those are downloaded to your device automatically. So you have them available offline without having to think about it. This is a huge feature for me. And currently Apple News does not work this way. Even saved stories are not saved on your device. And this now you'll just be able to open up and read even if you're on a plane or on the subway or whatever. But these features also use an expanded version of the kind of personalization that Apple News already does with news stories, where it tailors itself to your preferences and surfaces individual stories even from within these publications and publications themselves for you to follow based on what you already like. And then to bring it all around to that Apple philosophy of services, I think one of the biggest selling points for this for users, for sophisticated users, is that all the recommendations and all the personalization are done on your device using secure local data. So Apple does not even get your reading history from this service. So advertisers can't track you. And that makes this a completely different ballgame from the online, from the web version of news. And one that's much more appealing to me. I don't feel creepy reading stories about stuff that, like, I don't want to be tracked reading, you know, politically sensitive things or whatever it is. And that is exactly the kind of privacy commitment that I expect from Apple. And I feel like they really match that with a heavyweight service that can easily compete with the likes of Google and Facebook and Twitter, who are monetizing these services by spying on you. So I'm very, very into this idea. And I guess, like, it's worth finishing off by saying, like, it looks really nice. Like, the magazine layouts look great. They look natively digital, and they have different sort of features for iPhone versus iPad, and will have big full-width display on the Mac news app as well.
For some of them, as far as I can understand, and, like, you know, this is a new product that I can't really even find that much information out about, but looking through it, it seems as if what we have is sort of a weird mix. And this, again, goes to my every service gets better with time. What I'm kind of noticing is that some of the biggest magazines, they get this fun, well-formatted treatment. And then a lot of the magazines are just straight-up PDFs. And that makes sense in a way because it's 300 magazines.
Right.
The ones that are more niche, like I'm scrolling through right now, let's say Cycle World, which is all about motorcycles, it's straight up just a PDF version of the magazine that you can browse through as if you had picked it up in the store.
I guess that's not surprising. And actually, I feel like there's probably multiple different reasons that could have happened that way. And one could have been that it was an opt-in program that required like a whole like extra design effort that most cash strap magazines weren't willing to put in.
Right.
But it may also be that Apple's testing the format still with a few like dedicated partners and will roll it out to more people. The Apple News format initially was just RSS importing, and anyone could create a channel in Apple News using RSS feeds. And then they created this like new, richer sort of medium-like CMS that was only available to certain news outlets at first and now is available to anyone. You can create your own Apple News channel using that format. So I assume that will roll out to everybody eventually one way or another. But I also don't think that's a bad starting point. I mean, like, you know, those aren't, you know, Cycle World is not a magazine I'm going to read every day, but like, it's cool that it's there. I'd rather have it there than not have it there.
Exactly.
And then again, just to reiterate, the service is $9.99 a month for yourself and everyone in your iCloud family. And you get unlimited access to hundreds of magazines. I mean, like, you know, that's incredible. The more magazines they add to that, the more incredible that is.
Hi, Internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together.
Following Apple News, the next service to be discussed was Apple Pay. There were some rumors before this event about what they announced, but I didn't expect to see it so soon, actually. I thought that they were talking about something much further out in the future. But part of that is maybe just underestimating Apple Pay because it's not something I use everywhere yet.
Do you not use Apple Pay because it's not available where you shop or because you just prefer using a card or are used to using a card?
The former. Whenever it is available, I definitely use it. But there are certain terminals where it's not clear whether they have it or not, and I don't want to deal with it. But I do use Apple Pay. Mm-hmm. I actually maybe have understated how much I use Apple Pay. I probably do use Apple Pay every other time I pay for something outside of the house.
That's what I was thinking too, is I probably use it half the time. If I'm doing something like going through a drive-thru, I'm not going to use it because I think you can even do that in certain places, but that's weird.
Yeah.
And if I go to stores where it just clearly isn't supported, then I don't use it. But the amount of places that I shop that, you know, have supported it over the years has been becoming such a high number that I feel like I use it more than I don't use it. Mm. You know, like coffee shops, almost all of them are using Square or something else, which of course supports it. Target now uses it, which I think is a recent development in the last couple of months.
Yeah, they were one of the holdouts that wanted to pretend like they would get away with not using it.
Yes, Trader Joe's, CVS, you know, all these stores that you kind of just find yourself in on a regular basis, use them. So I think I use it more often than I don't use it at this point. Apple Pay is a pretty easy way of getting around.
Yeah, so they gave some numbers this time. They said that they processed 10 billion transactions this year, and they have 70% retail acceptance in the U.S., which is, you know, maybe slightly higher than we're estimating. So 70% in the U.S., and they said higher in other countries.
Oh, wow. Well, that makes sense because of the contactless payment thing was everywhere when I was in Europe like 3 years ago, and I couldn't use Apple Pay in the U.S. to save my life. And no one knew what Apple Pay was, but I would just use it and it would work, and people would be weirded out that I didn't pull out a credit card with a contactless payment thing, but instead my phone. So I totally believe that it's higher everywhere else. But if it's 70% in the U.S., I mean, that's really high. That's getting to the point where it makes sense for everyone to use it. It's at the point now where I'm going to go and try to convince my wife to use it because she just hasn't because of that thing where you use it once and it doesn't work and you feel flustered and then you stop using it for a whole year. But if we're at that high of a number, then that's probably going to get some new adoptions coming in pretty soon.
Yeah, and that's not even to take into account the new features that will expand it to anywhere now. The availability of a credit card, of a physical credit card, makes it so that you can use Apple Pay basically anywhere you aren't using paper cash.
Yeah, so Apple Pay trying out this new method of not only being the place where you put your cards, but being the place where you like have a card, an Apple credit card, is interesting to me because I've been watching with interest all of these companies that are running payments trying to become your bank. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like Square and Apple are kind of racing each other to get here. Square releasing a debit card last year and now Apple releasing this credit card. Mm-hmm. As somebody who runs a small business and has employees and I use Square to run all of the payments, I find it really interesting how convenient and easy it is for money to never leave the world of Square.
Yeah.
Because I run payroll through Square. So money comes in and then money goes out. But then when you sign up as an employee to be paid by Square's payroll, it actually allows you to put that money directly into your Square account and not go to a bank.
Is that instantaneous too?
And yes, it's of course faster than getting it paid out to a bank. So you could, in theory, never have a bank, you know, get paid to a Square account and then use a Square debit card to make all of your payments and then pay friends with Square. And Apple is doing something similar here with Apple Pay and Messages, and now have a credit card where you can spend the money out in the world. So I don't know. I just find this very fascinating that these companies are kind of making the idea of a bank obsolete. And I do know the credit card is backed by a bank, but I mean, not a bank that you're going to have to go into or a website that you're going to have to log onto.
Right.
Which is much preferable for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. It's not like you're going to do business with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is basically just like powering Apple's ability to do this.
Yes.
It is really interesting that they have, that you're going to have two cards in your wallet now that are Apple branded digital wallet. I'm talking about one called Cash and one called Card. So what they announced today, just to get it out of the way, is Apple Card, which is a credit card, as we've said, backed by Goldman Sachs, and it is a MasterCard. But it's to me like the most ambitious digital card product anyone has announced by far. Like Square's thing is really cool. Like I have one of their debit cards, but it's just like a normal debit card, except that you can use their app to sort of get temporary short-term points at various retailers. And it's like not that many retailers. This is a credit card that you can sign up for and get instantly on your phone. And then they mail you a Johnny Ive, presumably designed, like laser engraved titanium card that has no card number on it. It just has a chip and has your name and has an Apple logo. And all of that, all of the credit card stuff is handled digitally. So just like with normal Apple Pay transactions, a new credit card number is generated for every transaction. So there's no possibility of theft. And the CVV and the expiration date, like all of that stuff is digital. So it's not on the card, which is crazy, but it's true. And the service is designed to incentivize you to use actual Apple Pay, your watch or phone or whatever it is, to pay with. Anyway, it's incentivized this way. Rather than having rewards that you get at the end of your monthly statement, you get they created a feature called Daily Cash, which gives you points instantly on your Apple Pay Cash card. Jennifer Bailey, the VP of Apple Pay, who was introducing it, said it in such a funny way. She was like, and it's cash, like real cash. And everybody in the room laughed. It's not great compared to like specialized credit cards for people who want to get rewards for specific things, like travel, for instance. But it's 2% cash back for everything, 3% for anything from Apple, which makes it an absolute no-brainer for anybody who pays for anything in the App Store or anything like that. Because even if you don't use it for anything else, you just make it your Apple ID payment method and you get 3% off of everything forever.
Right.
And then it's only 1% back from using the physical card, which is really interesting because they want you to use the digital one. But it's great to have a card if you need it. And the place doesn't take Apple Pay. So you're still okay. So you get cash. It goes into your Apple Pay Cash card, which mine has had zero balance on it the entire time. I may have used Apple Pay Cash two or three times, but it's always just debiting my bank account. And now there's going to be money sitting on it, and it's going to be too much of a pain to transfer it every time because it appears every day. So I'm going to have a balance on my Apple Pay Cash card for the first time.
And then, of course, if you have to pay somebody,
right, it's there.
You'll use that because it's there.
And then you can pretend that it wasn't real money because it wasn't in your bank account. So that is coupled with some features that no other credit card that I know of has to make your financial life healthier, to use Apple's terms, because they're showing you in real time like what the cost plus interest would be of certain, like when you're going to pay your bill, like they'll tell you how much more it will cost if you pay X amount now versus the full amount, to help you sort of minimize interest that you pay. And you can pay more frequently than once a month, which I'm going to do. I'm definitely going to pay it off once a week instead of once a month. There are no fees of any kind. There's no late fees. There's no annual fee for the card. There's no international fees. Plus, it tracks your spending by category and it shows you the trends over time. And it even fixes the worst thing about credit cards, which is inscrutable items on your statement from merchants with weird names that you don't recognize. And she said it in a very interesting way. She said, using machine learning and Apple Maps, Apple automatically figures out what it was and makes it into something that you recognize. And that just sounds so much easier to deal with.
Not only does it make it easier because you don't have to look at the inscrutable text, but it makes it easier because you don't have to log into the weird website where you have to go and find the page with the inscrutable
text.
Right,
yes, exactly.
It's just in your Apple Pay wallet and shows you everything there whenever you want to look at it.
Yep.
So there's no need to log in and log out and go to that page. It just exists there. I'm a little dubious about whether or not they can actually always figure out the name of the company. I imagine there's going to be some weird false positives there where, you know, you go to In-N-Out convenience store and it tells you you spent $78 at In-N-Out Burger. Like, you know, those sort of things I feel like will probably happen, but it's going to be better than whatever exists already. And I'm sure there's some sort of fallback where you can look at whatever the name of the company says it is, so you can figure those sorts of things out. And of course, since it is machine learning, it'll get better over time, and I think it's going to be pretty rad. I want this entire card really just to have the titanium card that I know basically gives you nothing, so it's not really worth using.
Yeah.
But man, what a card. And we need the opposite of that meme-y phrase of, you know, Steve Jobs is rolling in his grave for this, because
Steve Jobs created this from his grave.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the fact that Steve Jobs didn't have this, you know, in his wallet would make him very mad, I feel like, because goodness, it is exactly the kind of thing that I feel like Steve Jobs would be creating if he were able to work on Apple Pay today. The fact that it has no information on it is just such a perfect thing for Apple to create. And I know that it's done that way for security reasons, but it just looks really cool. And it's a power statement in its own right. So I want that thing.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. And going along with the fact that it has no information on it, this too, to return to the theme, has way more privacy than any other credit card. Apple doesn't know what you bought. They don't know where you bought it. They don't know how much you paid for it. The credit card number is different every time, so it's impossible to track you. And the she also said something slightly ominous, which was Goldman Sachs will never sell your data, which makes me go, wait, what data does Goldman Sachs get from me? But you know, maybe what they mean is it's anonymized. And maybe it's not possible for it to be anonymized, but they've gotten Goldman Sachs to commit to saying that they'll never sell it. And you know, when Apple says Goldman Sachs won't do it on stage, they wouldn't say that if there was a risk of Goldman double crossing them, you know, because they wouldn't accept that blowback and they wouldn't do this. So, you know, I feel way better about using this than I do most cards.
Should we go to games?
Well, so interestingly, they actually said, let's talk about the App Store next.
Mm-hmm.
The games feature that they announced gets its own tab in the App Store app. But it's the, by far the most game focused thing Apple has ever done. And I think it's really exciting. I think you know a lot more about the sort of existing market for stuff like this. So maybe it's best if you present what Apple has announced.
I think it's interesting to see that Apple has come out with this thing called Apple Arcade, I think only a week after Google sort of pitched their own version for gaming's future, I think called Stadia. I'm not actually sure if that's how you pronounce it or not, but I believe that is.
Yeah, like the plural of Stadia.
Yes, Stadia. And this is sort of something that's happening in the world of games all over, which is a move away from buying things on an individual basis and instead paying a subscription to just get access to a bunch of games. Microsoft Xbox and Sony PlayStation both have offerings of this sort where you can just pay a fee and get access to a bunch of things. Xbox is sort of the underdog in the race between Sony and Microsoft right now. So its offering is like pretty good from what I understand. You're basically getting access to every exclusive Xbox game immediately by just paying this this kind of subscription pass to it. Sony's is a little different where you get access to a back catalog that isn't necessarily amazing, but still pretty cool. And there's rumors that Microsoft is going to up the ante and make their subscription service even better soon. And there might be some weird things happening, like the ability to play Xbox games on your Nintendo Switch or your iPhone, which would be cool to me. Google's offering is sort of still mysterious as far as I understand it. It seems like they had a press conference where they kind of talked about it, but around it in some ways. But it's a streaming type service where you can play a bunch of games on really any device that you have, and it'll use cloud computing to give you a good experience as long as your internet's fast enough. So this, to me, is Apple's version of it all, which is different. It is them not saying, let's give you access to all these high-powered games, but really acting as a publishing house for game developers who have interesting and innovative ideas for how to make games well for the iPad and iPhone and, I think, Mac, which is pretty weird because I wasn't expecting that. And this whole thing is called Apple Arcade.
Great name. One of the best product names Apple has shipped in a long time, I think.
It is a very good name that is missing the plus that the rest of the services yeah. get. But I guess that's because Apple Arcade is just such a good name, they couldn't pass it up.
Maybe Apple Arcade Plus is still a few years away.
Yeah. And I think that what remains to be seen for this Apple Arcade is like what it actually means, because they sort of talked about it like these were all going to be exclusives. But from what I can tell, that can't be the case. There are a few games that I know are on Steam, on the PC, or just on different consoles already. The Sonic game they seem to be showing was a game called Sonic Generations, which has been around for a few years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't think these are all exclusives, nor do I think that they're all, like, you know, being worked on hand in hand with Apple and a developer. But it did seem like quite a few of them were, where Apple had allowed developers to kind of take their time making something that fit for the iPhone or iPad. Notably, a person who had been behind the Final Fantasy series is making this pretty crazy looking game where they're building like real sets and then putting 3D models inside of those sets and then making this weird mix of like real and CG to create these finished games. And a lot of the games just seemed really cool. Like, they had interesting vibes that very much fit what I would think of as an Apple product. They weren't necessarily, like, you know, high-speed, crazy, blockbuster, Call of Duty-type games. They were very much more contemplative or artistic in some way, and that makes me excited to see, like, what this actually gets you. But the real news here is that this is sort of Apple finally saying that the method that they have for distributing games hasn't been working.
Yeah.
It's certainly working for the people who are making freemium games that you have to spend a boatload for to actually get anything of substance, or, as we know, things of non-substance, like in PUBG, the game of our choice, where you can have a weird chicken suit if you pay enough money. But putting a game on the App Store and saying it's $5, I don't think that works very well. And this is a new method of actually getting paid to make experiential games. And I'm curious to see how it's actually going to turn out.
Yep. And we don't know the pricing. This began the part of the show where they announced very content heavy, interesting things that you pay a subscription for and then didn't tell you when it would be available or what the pricing would be.
Right.
The model is definitely involves some production or at least collaboration on Apple's side. Like, they're like, you know, you said earlier at the beginning, like, cynics might say that this whole services thing is just a cash grab. But I think the best argument against that is actually obvious if you think about how much money they're investing in the content. You know, like, Apple's not just buying these games. They're buying some of them, as you've said, but they're also paying to have them developed. And like, they're working with the studios to make sure that these games are good and exclusive and viable so that they can sell a subscription to them. And this is even more extreme in the final section of the show that we're about to talk about, where Apple's producing actual TV shows. But Apple is investing money in this. And so the amount of money that they're going to charge, whatever it is, has to be sustainable to create the content that's going into the services, because they're not just taking people's money and, you know, sprinkling it on people. They are paying them in advance to create the stuff. And I think that bodes really well. That's a good moment to segue into the TV part, which is really the truly new direction that I think Apple showed at this event. And it's true that there were personalities behind each of these things. In fact, it was almost weird how the original TV shows that they showed off were introduced not through showing video, but through having the creators come out on stage and talk about them. And these were all famous wonderful people that we all know and love. So that was fun in itself. But that was, I think, a very important gesture in the direction you're talking about, where the storytellers matter just as much as the stories do, if not more. In fact, I think that in the journalism section, in the Apple News section, one of the photographers said representation in the photograph matters, but representation of the photographer matters even more. And I think that that was a really interesting theme that definitely carried through into the games section and into the TV section. It's just as much about who is deciding which stories need to be told as it is about what stories need to be told in and of themselves. And so as much as they had these famous people out there talking about the shows they made, the segment was introduced by this video that was all about the importance of storytelling. And, you know, it's uplifting stuff in all the ways that you mentioned. I think that they even started to verge into territory that they didn't go all the way into that I think you and I and a lot of people I know would have really appreciated them saying, which is that it's like about more than just uplifting you and making you feel good or whatever. It's about giving you meaning, giving life meaning. You know, they did start to say that sort of thing. I think that they stopped one like level short of saying, these are like the myths of our time. These are the things that help us orient ourselves in the world, stories. I mean, they did say it, actually. That was sort of how the video began, with freaking Steven Spielberg saying that these stories are how we sort of navigate our way through life. And before they went to their original content, they announced something called Apple TV Channels, which bored me to tears. I was really not interested in what they're talking about. I do want TV to work like this, but nothing, at least nothing that is available in the service yet, is anything I subscribe to and or want to watch yet. So I'm not going to do it now just because it's in the TV app. Basically, all they announced is that you can subscribe a la carte to various video streaming services inside of the TV app, manage your subscriptions there, and then you get all of the same sort of video quality and offline storage on demand and ad-free and everything. And the family sharing inside of the app, inside of the TV app, which is a better experience to be sure than like having seven different services own apps that all work differently and have different levels of reliability. But it doesn't like change the world of watching TV online very much. And importantly, you know, Netflix isn't there. So I'm still going to be doing the exact same thing I was doing before with Netflix. And that's the only thing I subscribe to. But that's the idea, is that basically, like, they're trying to standardize TV subscription offerings by making them all there in Apple's own app and service. And then they're making the TV app available in more places. It's already on iOS. They're going to do presumably a Marzipan version of it on the Mac, they said, this fall. Apple TV Channels is available in May, but the TV app is coming to Mac this fall, which I presume means with the next version of Mac OS. And it's also coming to smart TVs, including Roku and Fire TV devices, which I was surprised by, and I think that's really cool. You probably, as a Roku user, are stoked about that.
Yeah, I do not have any Apple TVs in my house, but it's not because I don't want them. I would much prefer to use Apple's UI. I just happen to have a TV that was a Roku smart TV and already had Roku built in, and it just was way easier for me to use that and do basically everything that I'm already, everything that I would be doing with an Apple TV just on the Roku app itself. So if I get to turn that on and click an Apple TV button and then get right in there, I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, interesting. I had assumed this entire time that there was an Apple TV stick coming, and maybe it's not. Maybe this is the Apple TV stick. It's just an app on smart TVs, and there are enough smart TVs in existence now that you don't really need to actually have a piece of hardware anymore. You just need a piece of software that'll do the trick.
It's possible that there aren't even enough TVs on sale that don't have software interfaces to make it worthwhile to making a stick, because everybody will just prefer to install an app on their TV anyway.
I believe I read recently that it's more expensive to buy a non-smart TV than it is to buy a
sure
smart TV
true.
Now because they're selling your data.
Right.
But I guess if you open it up and just have the Apple TV app the entire time, you get away with a cheap TV without anything to sell off except the fact that you use the Apple TV app a lot.
I certainly hope that's how it works. It wouldn't surprise me if like the manufacturers of the TVs have some way of like scanning the pixels that are showing on screen and figuring out what you're watching anyway, or you know, microphones or whatever other creepy stuff. But you know, I'm sure Apple does the best they can.
I'll take it.
So the only other thing about Apple TV channels is that the TV app is going from 10 to 100 plus countries. So this is nice. They're going to like really roll out that integration of shows all into one place to like as many people in the world as they, you know, should, instead of just limiting it to the few markets that they serve first. So I mean, I don't have anything else to say about Apple TV channels. Do you? You were saying that it took you a while to even figure out what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah, you mentioned that you sort of felt like this was exciting to non-exciting as a event laid out. And this was where I started to lose interest because even the stuff that comes after it is interesting, but it's not done. And the Apple TV channels thing just felt kind of confusing to me as somebody who hasn't been using an Apple TV for a couple of years, because I assumed that these things all like already existed and they don't necessarily seem like evolutions of what you can do, but just like a different way to do things that you can already do in a different way than they want you to. So yeah, I didn't really care that much about it. I mean, I'll use it.
If you're the kind of person who like subscribes to HBO just while Game of Thrones is out and then unsubscribes when you're done, like this is definitely a way better way to do that than to download their, you know, figure out which of the two HBO apps is the one that you're supposed to use and then download it and install that and then use their interface.
That's a great example because I was recently staying with some family in LA. And I got an email saying that I was now signed up for HBO Go, even though we've been happily using our family's... Wait, no, that's not right. HBO Now is the one you pay for.
Yes.
And HBO Go is the one that you have if you have cable,
that's
right?
That's right.
I was immediately and unsuspectingly signed up for HBO Now, even though we've been using HBO Go and a family account for a while. And I realized it was because my wife really wanted to watch a documentary and she didn't understand why there were two apps and couldn't figure out why she couldn't put the login data into the HBO app. So now I've been paying for HBO Now for a little bit because I have forgotten to turn it off,
right,
which I would not forget how to turn it off if I were doing it within Apple's ecosystem. So that makes sense.
So I guess that's what's better today than it was yesterday, or rather will be better in May for unknown amounts of money. I mean, it's important to say these are a la carte subscriptions. This is not a package that Apple is pricing. This is a thing that all vendors are picking their own price, and presumably Apple is taking a slice of it and you're paying for what you want to use. Again, like this is how I want TV to work, but like I don't watch TV to the extent that this is worth adding to my life, given that I already pay for Netflix.
Hello, internet friends. It's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key.
The final thing announced today is something that we don't know for sure that it's going to be awesome, but it's certainly something that Apple thinks is going to be awesome. And if they're right, it's going to be a big deal. They announced Apple TV Plus, which was introduced with the extremely grandiose video about storytelling that I mentioned before, which featured movie stars and Hollywood directors talking about how important storytelling is And, you know, then the video ended and the lights come up and it's like the first set of famous people on stage introducing the show that they worked on. And then the lights went down and then the next set of famous people introduced their show.
And then the lights went down for a little longer. And then Big Bird comes out because yeah. It takes him longer to get out on stage than everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Most of these shows seem sort of aimed at, adult audiences, but obviously with the sort of Apple friendly, uplifting content. And it's probably like much lower in sex and violence than any other. They sort of glossed over that. Like, we don't know actually how like sexy or violent any of these shows are going to be, but presumably not very, because it's Apple.
Yeah. There was like a rumor a while ago that they passed over the idea of doing a Dr. Dre show because it was going to be too violent or over the top or something like that.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that sort of fit what we saw today, which was content for the whole family,
mm-hmm.
or content for the general audiences that they think that they're selling this to.
Or content for the youngest and most impressionable members of the family. So funnily enough, as a father of a six-month-old daughter, the thing I was most interested in immediately in this announcement was when Big Bird arrived and they announced a Sesame Street spin-off show that was about preschoolers helping the world by learning to code, which is extremely, extremely Apple, as you said. And I think sort of appeals to me in a sort of unfairly Apple nerd father way, because I will definitely want my child to watch this. But some of the shows seem like they had Jason Momoa, and a woman who I don't know who it is, come out to, introduce a show about like a post-apocalyptic world where everybody's blind and like people like this few survivors like figuring out how to live in a world where no one can see. That sounded pretty interesting premise. I would definitely watch the first episode of that. And that's how I felt about a lot of these shows. It's like, I would definitely watch the first episode of that. And there were a lot of shows and there were many more that weren't shown on stage. And so my feeling about this is like, Let's say this also costs $10 a month, which is a little less than Netflix costs. And I would have to assume that they're going to try and undercut Netflix in order to get people to do this. If three of these shows are as good or better for me as Netflix's shows, I'll definitely subscribe to this service.
The question that I really have here is, like, how much stuff can they possibly make? Because I'm assuming they're not going the Netflix or Hulu route where they're going to be bringing a bunch of stuff on. I don't think that like Friends is going to pop up in your Apple TV Plus library
right
at some point. So it has to be a pretty decent amount of stuff that they're releasing for you to want to pay money, especially because we're getting pretty jaded about how much we can get for the money that we have. I mean,
that's true.
Hulu is cheap now, and I think that Hulu and Spotify partnered so that you get like cheaper Hulu or cheaper Spotify if you have the other one. And you know, Netflix keeps increasing their price, but I think that they're spending like $15 billion on getting material for Netflix this year.
Uh-huh.
some ungodly number, and there's no way that Apple is putting that much money into this project. I thought I had read that they were putting $1 billion into
it. Yeah, it is in the billions, but it wouldn't surprise me if Netflix is spending 10 times more already.
Yeah, exactly.
But Apple has 10 times more money than Netflix. So, you know, like it's if it works a little bit out of the gate, I can imagine them turning up the volume.
And maybe what they'll do is they'll have a some kind of interesting release mechanism where a new show comes out every month for 6 months or something so that you don't want to unsubscribe because, oh, here's a new one. But you know, like the people that they're competing with right now as like new players are Disney. I think their service is called Disney Plus. I could be wrong, but no, I'm pretty sure it is because I noticed that the plus sign in their logo is really weird.
Yeah.
And off.
Typographically unrelated to the logo.
Yeah. Yeah. I just did not like it. And so in any case, you know, Disney is going to create a streaming service that has a bunch of new shows of really notable interest, like Marvel related and Star Wars related. And then they will also have every Disney movie, every Pixar movie, everything from ABC on their platform. So you know, buying a $10 subscription to Disney Plus is going to get you this back catalog of all this old stuff that you're nostalgic for, where this Apple TV Plus model is not going to do that. It's going to be a bunch of new stuff, which I bet will be good, but is unrelated to anything that you care about and might not have the back catalog to get you through a dry spell. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to know how this looks, because I don't know if I, a person who is very interested in story and telling stories well, and found a few of these show premises to be very interesting, would really subscribe to this mm-hmm. at this point.
Yeah.
Depending on how much it costs and how much they are able to put out there.
Which, once again, we don't know.
It feels kind of risky. Yeah. It of all the things that were announced today, it feels the riskiest. Getting publishers who are making paper magazines that are doing poorly to make digital versions doesn't seem that hard. Getting game developers to make games on a subscription service that will make them more money than putting their game on the App Store and crossing their fingers doesn't seem that hard. Getting people to sign up for a TV subscription in a very, very crowded ecosystem seems pretty hard.
Yep.
And I wonder why they feel the need to do this beyond the fact that there's just money in it. And, you know, Apple is notorious at this, right, of coming late to the party and doing the exact same thing that everyone else is doing, but just better. Mm-hmm. And I love that about Apple. I think that's what makes Apple so wonderful. You know, the fact that they made a credit card is a great example of that. Kind of late to make a credit card.
Yeah.
But of course, their credit card is way cooler and way better than any credit card. So it's not going to be hard to get people to jump ship and use theirs. But to get people to cancel Netflix or Hulu or compete with Amazon Prime Video, which you just get for having a Prime subscription, you know, that would be what I kind of had expected Apple to do, is start rolling these into an already existing subscription model. And I guess maybe they'll do that, right? Like, we don't really know that yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems in a lot of cases, in a lot of these services, that they tried and they couldn't get everyone. And that's why they're not there. It's certainly the case in news, and it's also sounds like it was the case in Apple TV channels, that they tried to get Netflix, but Netflix wasn't there. The terms weren't good.
Yeah, I mean it more in the sense of like how we had seen some of these shows that Apple was making be a part of the Apple Music subscription, which of course doesn't make sense. There's no reason that you should have like Planet of the Apps,
right,
or Carpool Karaoke because you subscribe to a music app. But, you know, to me, it's more of an incentivization to stay within the network is if you have this, then you also get all these really, really good pieces of art that we're putting out there.
Right.
But that doesn't seem like that's what Apple TV Plus is. I mean, the Plus itself seems to denote that you're going to be paying a certain fee just for this.
Right.
I had kind of been expecting like an Apple Plus, you know, like, hey, we are in the services game in a really big way. Pay us this flat fee and you'll get every service, instead of having to pay for Apple News Plus and Apple TV Plus and Apple Arcade. Pay us this amount of money that's discounted because you're getting everything and you get everything. But that doesn't seem to mm-hmm. exist.
Including iCloud storage and Apple Care and all that stuff.
Exactly. But that doesn't seem to exist. So it leads me to believe that this will be yet another price. And this is the one that I feel like they'll have the hardest time getting people to give them their money.
I guess we can't close without talking about the flagship who came out at the end, a certain Oprah Winfrey of some fame in television circles appeared on stage and sounded like an Apple executive. Honestly, she was talking like she's an Apple executive, which I guess she is at this point. You know, she's producing shows. That is one thing she's doing. Documentary series. It sounds like it's not like her talk show coming back. But she also said that her book club, the Oprah Book Club, this like huge thing that probably hundreds of thousands of people do. I don't know how many people are in the Oprah Book Club, but like that's coming to Apple Books as a first party feature. That was the first time books got mentioned on stage today, and the only time. But like that's a big deal. Like Oprah is now like leading Apple's content efforts in some way. And then, you know, when she finished sort of laying out her case that there are a billion people with iPhones in their pockets who can be uplifted by this stuff, you know, like she took her bow and Tim Cook came out and hugged her so tight and was like, I'll never forget this.
Yeah.
To her. You know, like she said it to her in a low voice. Like he didn't, he wasn't like doing his like talk. So, you know, obviously like Apple is entrusting a lot of the success of this to literally the best people in the world at this. I mean, Steven Spielberg, Ron Howard, J.J. Abrams. I just mentioned three white men. So I'll point out that they ended with Oprah Winfrey on stage. You know, like the best visual storytellers on earth are participating in this. And I guess that's what Apple's banking it on, is that they, is that like those people's expertise is going to do the job. Like, I think they could successfully make the case that it did in music by hiring, you know, the best record execs and like multi-platinum artists to participate in the platform. They made something that has taste, which is Apple's thing, you know, that has to have taste in order for it to be shipped. And like, that's the thing that they think makes the difference. You know, I think that it clearly has, you know, a distinct flavor. The question is like, is it bland or is it spicy? You know, is it going to be like totally boring, anodyne, like PG content that doesn't really do anything for you? Or is it going to be positive and uplifting in all the ways that they're talking about by being super real and being the antidote to like sensational crap?
I liked that. I liked that they ended with Oprah. I like that they ended by talking about creating documentaries about exploitation and like sexual trauma. I think that that's really cool that that's such a focus for Apple. And to me, this again is such a difference between what I see with companies like Amazon. Even Amazon seems obsessed with creating the next Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. and they're putting all this money behind multiple fantasy, high, interesting concept, multi-season ideas, including Lord of the Rings, I think. I think they're making a new show on Lord of the Rings. And Apple is over here getting a bunch of people to sign on to say, what kind of stories do you want? What kind of stories are not being made? Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston making a show about the weird, untold sexual dynamics behind, you know, daytime television. Like, I love that. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that stuff is existing because Apple sees that people aren't making these types of stories and they're willing to give very famous people lots and lots of money to make those stories that they feel need to be told. And like, that's what gets me the most excited about this, is not necessarily how much stuff they might be able to make, but the content of it. The one that I loved the most, Kumail Nanjiani's show about American immigrants and the crazy stories that people have who have immigrated to the States and done exceptional and extraordinary things. And he said that sometimes it would be funny and sometimes it would be sad. And I like that. Like, I appreciate the fact that there are a variety of ways that these creators know they can tell their stories, and Apple is kind of giving them carte blanche to do whatever they want with it. It seems, at least to me.
Mm-hmm. We could just mention in passing that last week, prior to this event, Apple had kind of a crazy week of shipping hardware, and they did it in an unusual way, using a lot of like kind of cheeky viral marketing and like appearing on podcasts and stuff that they don't usually do. And they also did this for the event this week. But did you see the fake live stream that they had going all day yesterday?
I didn't see that until today, like before the live stream, but that was really interesting.
So they tested their stream by like broadcasting, you know, like fake video of the empty Steve Jobs theater and like funny jokes going on screen and stuff. It's really, you know, not like them. And it certainly isn't like them to go on tech podcasts and just do interviews. The announcements last week were pretty major, frankly. I mean, you know, we're getting new AirPods, probably in the next 2 days. That's pretty wonderful. You know, they've expanded the iPad line in this very interesting way, by giving it a middle where there's now an iPad Air and an iPad Mini in the middle that are much better prices for a lot of people, but still provide really good features, compared to the base level iPad. And they updated the iMacs in ways that are not exciting, but are the same kinds of like incremental improvements that we want them to be making to the Mac, that they kind of stopped making. And it made us all worry whether the Mac was ever going to get improved again. But it looks like everything's kind of on track, for their core hardware product lines too. So they just got all that stuff out of the way so that they could do this event today. That's all about these new interesting directions and services. Pretty exciting time to be an Apple nerd.
To me, the whole fact that the hardware was kind of such a side note speaks to this idea that Apple is more than hardware. It is hardware, software, and services. And they are able to continue making hardware and creating new pieces of hardware while they are also developing the services. And sometimes the services will be the side note to the hardware, and sometimes the hardware will be the side note to the services. And we had the latter this week. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a good thing. Like the complaint that Apple has had over the last few years has been that it's stagnating, right? That like the hardware isn't moving fast enough, the software isn't moving fast enough, the services aren't developing fast enough. And this was a ton of stuff that came out within 1 week that proves that that isn't what's happening right now, and that they're making quite a few new things in quite a few new areas and moving quickly into whatever's next.